You're listening to the Rogues Radio Podcast, your home for creator interviews, comic book reviews, industry news and commentary, and the Retro Retrospective Movie Review Show. Welcome you to this special episode of the Rogues Radio Podcast. My name is Dave Beatty, and I am your host. I want to welcome aboard for this special episode my co-host, Ronnie Shinks. Ronnie, please tell the listeners a little bit about what you've done as a creative professional.
Hey, I'm Ronnie. I've done a little bit. First thing that I did was I was published in Dave's comic, Ushi Tales, issue 3. I did a little prose story called A Quest for Hope, which was pretty good. You should definitely check it out. The whole series itself. And that was, what, back... Good Lord, that was years ago, wasn't it?
That was quite a few years ago.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, now, fast forward a time far, far away from that. I am now doing podcasts as well. You can check me out at Turn the Page, which happens every other Friday. It won't be this Friday, but the one after, which is an offshoot from Saturday Night Gaming, which is my friends and I. What we do, we record our Dungeons and Dragons sessions, which is not just Dungeons and Dragons. We're actually doing our own thing called Heavenscape, which you should definitely check that out soon. It just started. With the Heishlands, or Heishlands. Oh man, Sean's gonna slap me. it's a Western fantasy setting right now, and I'm playing a character called Dr. Miles Stein, and, it gets pretty violent. We keep everything PG-13, but we have many stories on there from the Marvel Universe to, which will be coming up soon, which will be completely separate from Heavenscape. I'm doing a Mortal Kombat 6-week campaign, which is actually going to be on Twitch. You can find us, SN Gaming 2017. Should definitely check it out.
Very cool.
The Turn the Page is SNG Turn the Page, I believe. I'm not sure. Again, I'm going to get slapped by Scott or somebody there. Thanks, guys.
So we're going to start this episode off with normally called the movie news or movie news and TV. I'm always changing it roundup where we just talk about all the various news about what's going on. But on this particular one, we're focusing mostly on comic book stuff. Primarily, Eric Alexander and I have been focusing on sci-fi. We're going to be focusing on comic book stuff on this one specifically. So we're going to start off, we're going to talk about a lot of the news breaking, a lot of interesting things going on with the CW Crisis on Infinite Earths, like, multi-part event that's coming up. So we're going to start off, we're just going to talk about, like, who's confirmed to be in it, and then we'll just kind of speculate and kind of have a little fun here. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, sounds great.
All right, cool. So these are, according to the almighty interwebs, who are confirmed to be in the CW Crisis event. Well, to start off with, obviously we have the cast of Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Team Arrow, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Of course, Team Flash.
Right. Then you think you have Batwoman and Black Lightning as well.
And then, of course, Team Supergirl, because, you know, those are the shows they're promoting. Yeah. Right. Yeah, Batwoman will be in it. And then also, we will have, this will be the first time they'll actually be bringing the Black Lightning, cast members into the kind of the CW universe, which will be kind of cool.
That will be cool. Probably means I should go back and watch Black Lightning now.
It does. But I mean, don't feel bad. I mean, I have not kept up with all the CW shows myself. I kind of skip around and I'll watch a show here. I'll watch a show there. I normally do watch the big events. However, I did miss parts of, Invasion, primarily just because for a little while there, the shows, like, for example, I was watching Flash, as soon as the episode was aired, like the next day it was on Hulu. And you could watch it, which was amazing.
That was great.
And then they stopped doing that, and then I had to buy seasons. So I was buying season for a while because I don't have regular cable, and so I'm usually waiting for stuff to show up on Netflix or something. And honestly, it's like you just kind of forget about it, you know. And there's other things going on. I did, however, go watch all of Elseworlds before this particular episode. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I was kind of surprised because the tenor from a lot of the different TV and movie review, like, I don't know what you call them, video blogs or YouTube shows or whatever I listen to, their general tenor, the way they feel about the CW superhero shows, are kind of like, it's CW, you know, and it's kind of this sort of like, you know, well, it's better than nothing, I guess, is kind of the general attitude I get with them when they talk about it. And Elseworlds was actually really well done. So I don't get that. So it looks like, obviously, we're going to be getting the Supergirl version of Lois Lane and Superman. That makes obvious sense, right?
Oh, yeah.
It looks like from the original Crisis comic series, we're going to be getting Pariah.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting because it's Tom Cavanaugh as Pariah, which he's playing other characters as well. So, I mean, it's Hells. Yeah, his name is Hells now. Right. Wells.
Which was weird because I was to speed. This is the bad pun, not intended, but we're going to let it ride. I was not up to speed on the Flash. And he has like a French accent, and at times it kind of struck me kind of odd. He'll come walking into this scene with the French accent, and I'm just like, what in the world is wrong with him? But anyhow, obviously it's not the same. It's not the same character I was watching the last time I was watching this show, because he did not have a French accent. You know, it kept making me think of with Disney Plus, you know, they're going to be doing Moon Knight, which I'm really excited about Moon Knight, which we haven't talked about on this show at all, but I'm a huge Moon Knight fan. Matter of fact, over on Comic Book Page, that podcast, Bob Bretall, who owns the world's largest comic book collection, is a friend of mine. We actually did two episodes where we basically reviewed every issue of Moon Knight, starting with Werewolf, his first appearance in Werewolf by Night, through all the Marvel spotlights and everything, all the way through to the end of the originals and kept it run. It was two-parters. I think there were 4 hours each. And it was Moon Knight Rising, and Moon Knight Begins, and then Moon Knight Rising or Moon Knight, I mean, I forget. It was kind of a Batman pun or something, but every time he would come on this scene, he would talk like this. He kept making me think of Frenchie from Moon Knight.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, no, that had to be quite of a shock. Good old Sherlock.
Right. So we've got, of course, the Anti-Monitor, which will be played. Looks like, well, this concept art looks like it might be the same actor who's actually playing the Monitor, also playing the Anti-Monitor. He doesn't look quite as alien as, you know, he did in the comics. I was curious how they were going to do that.
You know, I'm kind of curious about that as well. It's like I'm hoping he's going to have more of the comic book look, because they've been pretty good with the character designs that look like their comic book counterparts. You know, they haven't done any too much of a grand redesign, you know, like, for say, the Dark Phoenix X-Men movie, which I'm not going to talk about right now because that still pains me a little bit. that's all I'll say about Dark Phoenix. But the designs, everything, I've been so faithful and everything. It's great on the CW shows. I mean, it makes me happy. I mean, look at Batwoman that's coming out. I mean, she looks just like her comic book counterpart. I mean, Supergirl looks great. Kind of wish she had the yellow in the S, but it doesn't bother me too much. I mean, that's just a minor, minor thing. But some of the redesigns on there, I mean, it's a bigger, much bigger step than it was on Smallville.
Well, and it's interesting. Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because when you look at, for example, like on Arrow, like they've actually had Wild Dog on Arrow, and he actually looks like Wild Dog. You know,
Yeah, that was crazy.
They've done some really interesting stuff with, in my opinion, everything they've been doing. So now here's one of the big surprises that they announced a little while ago, which is actually Burt Ward is going to be in this event, but we have no idea who he's playing. Well, and it's, well, no, and I'm not saying they should put him in spandex either, but it's interesting because for those, there may be some people listening to the show right now who are not aware, probably not many, but Burt Ward played the original Robin, the first live-action Robin.
And I don't know, it's like as long as they don't slap him in yellow spandex, I'm good.
So that's quite a callback when you're talking about the DC characters on TV.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually really excited. I'm hoping that'll be sort of like a Kingdom Come version of like Red Robin or something, like in armor. That'd be really cool.
Right, which brings us to our next one, talking about Kingdom Come. We have Kevin Conroy, who's actually going to be Batman.
Well, that's the thing. He's always been Batman.
Well, I know that, but he's always been the voice of Batman. I mean, to most, I think most diehard Batman fans, Kevin Conroy is one of the definitive Batmans, if not for some, the definitive Batman. Obviously, his role as Bruce Wayne Batman on Batman the Animated Series is still, in my opinion, probably the best version of the character we've ever gotten.
It is. I definitely agree with that, hands down. And what's really interesting for me is I actually looked up some of the original photos, good lord, I could just say old photos of a young Kevin Conroy. Man, he looked just like Bruce Wayne from the animated series.
Right, there was definitely some similarities. And it's interesting because the rumor mill is all a flutter. It goes between, like, he'll be playing the Batman Beyond old man Bruce Wayne, and then myself, as well as some rumors I've seen, who believe that he might actually be the Kingdom Come version of Bruce. You know, in the sort of the, I don't know what you would call it, the mechanized suit that helps him move around, the kind of the bat armor, so to speak.
Oh man, that would be amazing.
That's personally what I'm holding out for. I'm really hoping he's going to be the Kingdom Come Bruce Wayne Batman to another person we're going to be talking about here later in just a couple minutes.
Yeah, I'm hoping so too, because personally that's been one of my favorite versions of Batman. I mean, that and just because Kingdom Come was like really like the big comic thing that really wanted to, or a comic run that wanted me to get into writing comics, and, you know, just, I mean, it even inspired me to draw for a little bit. You know, I still dabble in illustrations every now and again. I mean, they suck, but I mean, I still dabble in them.
Well, and that'll bring us here to our, I think, the big shock, the thing that surprised me the most, and that's the fact that Brandon Routh will be playing the Kingdom Come Superman.
Man, when they announced him as Superman, I thought he was going to be the Superman Returns one, so I was like, whoa. And then when they said Kingdom Come, like you said, it blew my mind. I mean, I was freaking out. I'm still freaking out about that.
Yeah, no, it's really cool, and I mean, in a weird way, I mean, he could still be quote unquote the Superman Returns version of Superman, but just the much later, maybe older Kingdom Come equivalent of it. You know, like in that universe where the timeline follows that through line, and you know, Lois is killed. You know, spoiler alert for people who haven't run Kingdom Come, which I can't recommend Kingdom Come enough. But in Kingdom Come, the Joker kills Lois Lane. And then Superman essentially ends up going into exile on basically the farm in Smallville and becomes a recluse. And then returns after the new age of heroes have run amok and they're causing as much chaos as they're actually solving. And he returns to kind of lead the heroes into like a new age.
So, I mean, if they do all that, I mean, if it's that Superman, that's going to be insane. It's, man, I'm hoping, because I mean, that was my favorite Superman. I mean, I love the Gray Temples. I love the new S. It was the first time really in the comics I've seen him get that angry and just that. I don't know. It seemed like it was just more realistic, I guess, because of the artwork, the phenomenal artwork by Alex Ross.
Right.
But I mean, like, even like the writing and everything, I mean, it was great. Like you said, like when he was in exile and it took Wonder Woman and Bandit coerce him back. But I mean, but then again, it's like, or Wonder Woman, excuse me, because he was fighting against Batman and the other ones.
Right.
So it's been a while since I've read Kingdom Come, so definitely correct me if I...
Well, no, I mean, it was Wonder Woman. She was the one who basically went to the farm and tried to bring him out of seclusion. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see, because I think of all these characters, I think the one important DC character that isn't represented in some form is Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman is the only one not represented in some form.
Yeah, which I think that might end up being, hopefully, Linda Carter.
Well, we'll see. I mean, if we actually got, you know, Brandon Routh as Kingdom Come Superman, Linda Carter as sort of the Kingdom Come Wonder Woman in some form, and then Kevin Conroy as the Kingdom Come version of Bruce Wayne, Batman in some form, that would be amazing to see them represent the DC Trinity on television. I mean, or even in a movie. I mean, to see them come together would be amazing.
That would be amazing, man, especially after Justice League came out. It'd be nice to see a proper, you know, just a good representation of each character.
Well, and it's weird because I know that a lot of the DC fans have not been happy with how the DC universe has been represented at times in the movie sphere or the DC movie universe per se. Myself, you know, some of the movies I liked more than others, but it really feels like that interconnected where the characters are coming and going into each other's storyline. It's been going for a very, very long time if you're a DC Comics fan, and it has been happening basically on television. That's where it's been happening.
Mm-hmm.
So
I definitely agree with that, and I was kind of certainly hoping, I mean, I doubt it will happen, that Crisis on Infinite Earths on the CW can kind of reboot and charge everything, not just for the CW, but for the movie universe as well. Because I think that would be insane if, say, you know, like the reason they've been so quiet is because the movie cast is going to be on the CW shows. I mean, that would blow my mind if they... I mean, I doubt they will do that, because, I mean, it's the studio execs are... Well,
I mean, can,
I was taught if you can't say anything nice, don't say it at
I mean,
all.
So just imagine, I mean, if Jason Momoa was on screen for like a couple minutes as Aquaman in the middle of the battle sequence, you know, and just have like a couple. I mean, I can't imagine how much the DC Comics fans would freak out. You know what I mean? If the movie, well, with actually, in all honesty, with Brandon Routh there, the movie universe is being represented to an extent, you know?
Right. So you're right about that.
It's, and then the one I haven't heard about that I'm hoping is definitely going to be there, and that's going to be John Wesley Shipp as the Flash, the 90s.
It was.
Okay, well then I'm happy, because I was thinking this that actually had me paying attention when they first announced that, and they released a couple of photos, and I'm like, what? And then they released that clip right. of him, and he's kind of crawling across the ground, and he looks up, and it's the Time Monitor with the Book of Destiny. I was like, holy cow, this is a comics and TV superhero deep dive all in one little like couple minute segment. So one of my favorite actually Justice League stories actually involves Dr. Destiny and an alternate reality of the Justice League. So that was just amazing to see the Book of Destiny, and then eventually, you know, Dr. Destiny himself represented towards the end of the Elderlands miniseries, so, or event, whatever you want to call it, so.
Oh, yeah, and, oh, sorry. Yeah, it's, that's just one thing that just really, really intrigues me about the crisis coming up. There's so much rich storytelling they can do that it's like, we don't know who's going to die, because, I mean, the original one, the suit died. You know, Superman was sitting there just grasping her, like her lifeless body and stuff like that, and I just don't know if, like, because CW has like a good track record of changing little, or not little things, but things like that up to catch us off guard, kind of like what Marvel does with their cinematic stuff. They'll change big moments so you truly not only surprise those who to the comic book world, to the loyal readers as well, so that we won't go in, well, I already know what's going to happen, why am I here?
Right.
You know? And I'm glad that they do that. There are some people that are mad about that, and well, it's okay for them to be wrong. But I always enjoy when they change things up, because I don't want just a direct adaptation of this comic on screen and stuff like that, because I've already read it.
Right.
I already know what's going to happen. Now, I want to see something a little different. I want to see a little bit more artistic liberties taken and stuff like that. Now, I don't want a word-for-word verbatim translation. Now, I do want like some things to remain the same, of course, or some things you shouldn't change, but it's, I just love seeing these different interpretations happening on screen. I mean, it's right. Wonderful.
So the it's going to be a for those listeners that this is going to be a 5-hour crossover event. The first three episodes are going to be in December, and then the last two are going to be in January of 2020. But this is going to be something really special. And if you're a DC Comics fan, obviously fan CW shows, if you're just a superhero fan and you just enjoy this entertainment, this is a great opportunity to go back, at the very least in my mind anyway, you know, watch the Elseworld prep for this, get familiar with the shows, and just settle back in my mind anyway, just kind of celebrate some of the characters and the history and legacy of DC Comics on television. So one of the other things we're going to talk about here, and we're going to discuss in the roundup segment, is there's been some interesting information coming out of the Disney Plus, the streaming app from Disney. Now, Eric Alexander and I, on a previous episode, covered a lot of the Star Wars, a lot of the Marvel shows. We didn't touch Moon Knight too much, because I actually want to do an entire episode about Moon Knight. But beyond that, one of the things that's kind of being loosely reported, I'm not sure if this is totally set in stone or not, but it looks like that there was a trial version of the app that was given a test run in the Netherlands, and there was a whole bunch of content on there that kind of surprised people, and it's been loosely confirmed, not 100% confirmed, that a lot of this content is going to be available on the Disney Plus streaming service, and it's a lot of the classic Marvel animated cartoons. So a partial list here that came across showcased that X-Men 92, Spider-Man 94, Spider-Woman of all things from 79, Spider-Man from 81, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Iron Man from 94, Fantastic Four 94, The Incredible Hulk cartoon that was in the 80s, the Silver Surfer cartoon from the 90s, as well as Spider-Man Unlimited. That's pretty cool. I've always loved a lot of these cartoons, and I enjoy rewatching them, specifically Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, but that's one that's sometimes hard to just be able to sit down and watch again, because not because it's bad, but because it's always moving. Like, sometimes it'll be on this streaming service, and sometimes it'll be on another. And, like, right now, I don't even know where to watch it if I wanted to watch it.
Nowhere. Well, they have sites, but they're not quite legal and might tear your computer up. But no, that's my entire childhood just right there. And those were the cartoons that got me into all these characters when I was younger. I watched those in Batman the Animated Series, and The Tick. And Eek the Cat, I think. Yeah, that's about it. But man, it was just... Jeez, that news. All that is true, man. It's... Marvel just won the streaming war for me. I mean, it's like, hands down, it's... I like the DC Universe app. It's really cool, but at the same time, they don't have a lot of content on there. I mean, I look to see which movies are on there. They don't even have all the DC movies on there. They don't have all the DC cartoons on there.
Right.
They only have some, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, why don't they have all the content on there? Wherever. And then you have the Marvel app, which has Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, the Incredible Hulk series, which I actually bought on iTunes, which you can actually find these if you want to own them, but you can only watch them on Apple products, and you have to find weird ways to stream it to the TV, etc. But I'm just excited I don't have to buy any more of those, and I can just stream them and watch them on my TV, because, I mean, that's, to me, that's still one of my favorite cartoons. I mean, I just love that intro to the Hulk.
Right, that intro. We're talking about the 1980 Incredible Hulk cartoon. That intro.
Yes. Well,
and, you know, that series as a whole is a lot of fun and really enjoyable. That's one of the ones that you can't really easily watch, I don't think, for quite some time.
It has not been available anywhere. Yeah. I've looked.
And that one that's one of those, it's like in the fog of my memory, because I remember watching it, and I remember I think it was the pilot episode for a lot on Puppet Matter, which is actually normally a Fantastic Four villain.
Because I watched that on VHS all the time.
And I love those VHS cassette tapes they had, like in the Ace the Clamshell ones, where they had classic Namor cartoons, and then they had the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends that had Namor in them, and those clamshell.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, those things were amazing. And I just remember just, like, standing in the aisles at Toys R Us, just staring up at those VHS tapes and just, like, going, man, I wish I had the money to buy all of these. Because that stuff is so much fun.
I know,
fun.
Man. I still have one of them. I have The Fly.
Right. No, which is funny, because I think The Fly is... That's a 60s Spider-Man, and isn't it the two brothers that are twins?
I think so, and I think it has Spider-Woman on there as well.
Okay, yeah, because I think The Fly was in Spider-Woman as well. That's a good point. But I mean, right here, I mean, we've got, you know, one of the gateway cartoons that introduced a lot of people to the X-Men, which of course is the 92 X-Men cartoon, which is, in my mind, is still a classic.
Oh man, I own every single one of those on DVD.
And for me, Spider-Man is Amazing Friends, as well as Spider-Man 81. Spider-Man 81 was a great cartoon series too, because it was basically Spider-Man fighting Dr. Doom, and those were a lot of fun.
Oh yeah.
A lot of stuff with Latveria and what was happening in Dr. Doom's country, and that was a really fun series as well. Of course, the one I'm interested to, there's two on here I'm interested to watch again. I haven't seen in a long time, and that's of course the Silver Surfer cartoon, which is combined a lot of CGI elements at times.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man and Unlimited. That was another cartoon I remember quite enjoying, which basically is the 2099 version of Spider-Man. So all of these sound great to me.
Yeah, those are a lot of fun. The Silver Surfer cartoon had Thor on there, too, I believe, in a couple episodes. That was voiced by John Rhys Davies.
Oh, yeah. Which, of course, he played the Kingpin in the TV... was Trial of the Incredible Hulk, the TV movie.
Yeah, that's right. Remember that?
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like you rewatch it, and of course, the Netflix Daredevil is obviously light years better. I think even the Ben Affleck Daredevil is light years better. But there's still something about that Hulk TV movie, the Trial of the Incredible Hulk, I enjoy. So,
well, yeah, it's a lot of cherished memories, good ones, and. Yeah, it's just a lot of fun. It's nostalgic, just like the Return of the Incredible Hulk with Thor and, you know, and Hulk fighting against each other, him calling you ugly troll!
Right.
You know,
right.
Stuff like that. And I mean, it was just fun. It was great.
I think the only one that threw me off was the last one, because I'd been hearing, I remember before I watched it, there was all these weird rumors about Elektra was going to be in it and somehow it's going to tie into Iron Man. So when I actually watched it and it started at that instant, I was like, oh, is Tony Stark going to show up? And then there's a character in there. She's kind of like a La Femme Nikita type character. And it makes you wonder if at one point that character was Elektra. Although when you see what they do with her, it's like that made no sense for her to be in the Hulk.
Yeah, it's, yeah, the last one, I don't like Death of the Incredible Hulk just because, like, oh, he dies from falling from a plane. Okay, who knew? Height is how you kill the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, and it's weird because he jumped from some pretty extreme heights over the course of even those three TV movies. So, but yet, the plane, well, I don't know. Anyhow, they had to end it some way, I guess. So,
they could have just ended it open-ended.
You mean him still, the lonely man with him just walking off in the distance still?
That would have been beautiful. Yeah. Because, I mean, that's how the intro goes. And it's like he just could have been roaming around and, like, whoever needs him. They didn't have to kill him. I mean, that was just, that's a problem with, like, TV or just, like, any creatives. It's like they, well, we don't know what to do with them. Let's kill them. Like, no, just end it so somebody else can pick it up later on down the road and maybe do, like, a really good sequel or something.
You know, it would have been kind of fun, I've always thought, would have been if they would have actually had, you know, he's trying to find a cure, and instead of it actually being a cure, it would have split the Hulk from Bruce Banner. And then Bruce Banner could have still been like, I'm free, you know what I mean? And then you would have seen the Hulk smash through a wall and run off, and they could have just left it there. You know, the Hulk running around loose, you know, free of Bruce Banner, you know? That might have been interesting.
That would have... That'd have been really, really good.
So for this episode's retro retrospective, we're going to be talking about Superman 2. We're talking about the actual Richard Lester version. This is the original theatrical release of Superman 2. This, of course, is a Warner Brothers picture, and the movie came out in 1980. I'm going to read the summary here real quick. We'll talk about the cast a little bit, and we're going to talk about our initial impressions about how we first heard about and our initial impressions of Superman 2. So, picking up where Superman the movie left off, three criminals, General Zod, Ursa, and Non, from the planet Krypton, are released from the Phantom Zone by a nuclear explosion in space. They descend upon Earth, where they could finally rule. Superman, meanwhile, is in love with Lois Lane, who finds out who he really is. Lex Luthor escapes from prison and is determined to destroy Superman by joining forces with the three criminals. So this, of course, to me is one of those classic superhero movies. Obviously, in the cast, we have Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor, Christopher Reeve as Superman Clark Kent, Ned Beatty as Otis, Jackie Cooper as Perry White, Sarah Douglas as Ursa, Margot Kidder as Lois Lane, Jack O'Halloran as Nan, Terrence Stamp as Zod, Valerie Perrine reprising her role as Miss Teschmacher, Susanna York as Lara, Superman's mother, and then some various other assorted characters, including E.G. Marshall as the president, and of course Mark McClure as Jimmy Olsen. So this was... this, of course, came out in 1980. It's interesting because the budget was reported to be around $54 million, and it actually made worldwide $108
million
back in 1980. So I'm going to talk just briefly about how I first heard about Superman 2. Now, when Superman 2 came out in 1980, I was obviously still pretty young. I remembered seeing ads and comic books for it. I was excited to see it. I did get to see this one in the movie theater. And my initial impressions were I really loved it. At the time, it was really amazing because it was the first time that we'd seen Superman with his powers fight, you know, super powered villains. Because in the first movie, you know, Lex Luthor's the main villain. And he's kind of battling, you know, the Lex Luthor's plan, per se. So it's a lot of trying to stop an earthquake and trying to stop part of California from falling into the ocean and, you know, trying to survive the, dealing with these nuclear warheads, these nuclear missiles. So it's a great film. The first one is definitely a classic, too. But this one's kind of unique because it's the first time we saw Superman actually take on someone who had similar powers. So a superhuman versus a supervillain. And at the time, there'd never been anything quite like it. So it's pretty amazing. So that was how I initially heard about it. I remember seeing ads and stuff for it and then going in and then seeing it in the movie theater. So Ronnie, how did you first hear about Superman 2?
Well, unfortunately, I hadn't been born yet when it originally came out. But man, I had grown up, I had watched the first Superman movie, and I remember watching Superman 2 on VHS, and man, it kind of blew me away, because, I mean, here you have, like you said, you have Superman fighting the super criminals that are on his power level. I'm like, whoa, how is he going to defeat these guys? And lady. And, yeah, it's just... Man, it was crazy. I was excited. I watched it, thoroughly enjoyed the movie. My first reactions to it. I mean, I remember like the scene in Paris, like where they're worried about the bomb and he threw it into space and it freed the prisoners. And then I remember, you know, just like everything from Planet Houston to.
Right. Which I love. I love that. The whole Planet Houston?
Yeah. It's like, I remember that. I remember him just announcing, like, on the TV, like a wrestler, where is the Superman? I mean, I loved all of that.
Oh, yeah.
And just when they were all fighting under the sewer and, like, the earthquake was happening and stuff. I mean, it was really cool. And, you know, like, knocking each other, like, through buildings, or not through buildings, but, like, to, like, billboard signs and stuff. And, just, I don't know, it was, I thoroughly enjoyed that when I was younger.
So we're talking again about Superman 2. We're going to talk in this segment about how we feel about Superman 2 today. There's a cat somewhere.
Yeah, that's Kira. She's begging to get in somewhere, but she can't get in there.
It's all good. All right, because sometimes there's a little jingle, jingle, jingle in mine, and that's my dog, Lucy. So, all right. So we're going to get into this. I'm going to be honest. I love this movie quite a bit. But this is, I think for me, this is the one that of the, well, I love this movie, but I have issues with this movie.
yeah.
As a kid seeing it, I never questioned a lot of what happens in the film. And, you know, and we're kind of lucky, in all honesty, in this day and age to have had so many amazing and wonderful comic book adapted movies. I'm really going to be nitpicking this movie because of the embarrassment of riches that we have today.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, because let's be honest. I mean, until we've had some of the films that we've had recently, Superman 2 was still held up as one of the greatest, you know, comic book movies of all time. And I think in an extent, in some ways, it still is. I think Superman, the movie, is the standard by which all are measured. But Superman 2, it shows its age, and it has some issues kind of here and there. And, of course, we're talking about the Richard Lester cut, not the Richard Donner one. I kind of have some issues with the Richard Donner one, too, at times. But anyhow, let me go ahead and get into some of the things. So as I remember as a kid, some of the things that always bothered me, I never liked the weird cellophane S thing. I still don't know where that came from. As an adult, it still bothers me when Superman throws the weird cellophane S. While I quite like, at times, the whole segment where Superman gives up his powers so he could be with Lois Lane, and I understand the logic behind that, I still don't know how I feel about that segment. I still don't.
Yeah, I will say that that movie taught me the importance of arts and crafts and how it can defeat supervillains from other worlds. But, right. But no, man, in all seriousness, yeah, that whole scene with, I don't understand that. Superman would never do that to be with Lois, because the world.
Right.
He's there to protect the world, not just one person.
Right.
And, like, I didn't agree, like, looking back at it now, it's like, yeah, I don't agree with that. Also don't agree that, you know, some sticks of C4 equals a nuclear explosion.
Right.
The Paris thing, because, like, I've always wondered that, even ever since as a kid, it's like, I just kind of went, man, it's like, how did such a small device make an explosion that big? But, of course, you know, an atom's super tiny, but even now, in big-budget movies, it's like, suitcase nukes or just like a couple of blocks and stuff like that, or dirty bombs. But I mean, it's the most movies, like, for explosions of that magnitude, they're giant missiles, giant bombs that are like in backs of vehicles and stuff like that, you know. And it's just, I was just like, wow, how did such a small bomb with what looked like chewing gum or something do that? But it was just, I don't know. That's always bothered me. And like you said, like the cellophane S thing bothered me. It also bothered me that they never really hit each other.
Right.
It's like, oh, I'm going to come after you. We're just going to wrestle.
Right.
It's like, this isn't Greco-Roman superpower matches. This is like, they're here to slug it out, and
well, there were a couple of hits here and there.
Yeah,
but not like what you would have. I mean, because it's interesting too when you watch it in context of Man of Steel, you know. And I think that's the difference between the time periods in which we live in too.
Mm-hmm.
They felt comfortable to take it to the extreme in Man of Steel, whereas with, you know, Superman 2. I'm pretty sure they were wondering how far to take things, you know?
Well, I know that Richard Donner originally wanted to have more blows thrown in there. Like, he wanted, like, people to actually get hit. Because, I mean, it's superpowered beings. I mean, Superman's going to protect people. He's not going to just sit there, toss them, it's not the Incredible Hulk 70s with Superman.
Right.
Like, he's going to pull out, he's going to knock somebody out. I mean, that's even in the Richard Donner cut. I mean, he does hit people from time to time.
Right.
But we were talking about the Richard Lester cut today. But yeah, it just always bothered me about that. And another thing that always bothered me, there's a lot of footage of the back of Gene Hackman's head.
Or, excuse me. Which makes you wonder, is like, was he on set that day?
I don't think he was. If I remember correctly, anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, I think that was unnamed body double Gene Hackman impersonator.
Right. Probably was.
And it's just like, it's, as far as we know, it was Nuclear Man impersonating Gene Hackman. It
might have been.
Because, I mean, Gene Hackman impersonated Nuclear Man.
That's true. Oh, man. He was. That, you know, that's... Have you... Oh, man. Have you seen the original version of the Nuclear Man stuff from Superman 4? Because there was a guy who was a lot more like of a Frankenstein kind of monster. Have you seen any of that stuff?
Cluck like a chicken.
Okay, yeah, there you go. I still don't know. We'll have to talk about that movie. I still don't know what in the world they were thinking with that movie at times.
I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, but I also proudly have in my studio an autographed photo from Nuclear Man. So,
well, yeah, it was still a really good concept on paper, just executed extremely poor. But it's one of those guilty pleasure movies of mine. It's like I still enjoy watching it and laughing and stuff. I mean, I'll have to rewatch it again sometime soon. I'm gonna do it with some friends. I have the back when I worked at Game Exchange, we got, you know, good discounts on everything, and one of the items actually came into her store was the 9-film Blu-ray set of the Superman anthology and the Batman anthology.
Wow,
all the way up to Superman Returns and all the way up to Batman and Robin. And it was like 30, 40 bucks that I paid for it.
Cool.
So, like, I got that, and it's like, I can watch everything now.
Right. Right. Because, you know, that's one of those things. It's like, I quite enjoy a lot of Superman 3. And it's weird because there are segments in Superman 3 I think I like better than some of the segments in Superman 2.
Like, oh man, the faux brainiac lady. Yeah, I remember her.
Yeah. And the for example, like if I have to pick between watching the Niagara Falls stuff or watching Superman save the workers at the chemical plant, I'd rather watch the chemical plant sequence from Superman 3.
Well, yeah, because the Niagara Falls thing was just kind of boring.
Yeah, I never, and that's one of the things. It's like there's some really fun stuff in Superman 3. There's some cringeworthy stuff too, but there's some things I quite like about Superman 3, and I actually kind of like Richard Pryor in that movie playing that role. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's a good thing for me to admit on audio for posterity, but I've always kind of enjoyed Superman 3. So that's one of my guilty pleasure movies is Superman 3. So,
well, yeah, and it also has one of the really good, just a phenomenal scene in my opinion of Superman versus Clark Kent, which was really, really good.
Yeah,
I like loved that. Now Superman running around being, you know, super vandal. I don't know if that was particularly good. Like him, it's like, I'm going to go drink tequila. I'm going to do everything in an evil person. That was just kind of dumb.
Right.
But him.
What are you looking at?
Huh? Yeah. It's like, Superman can't get drunk. What are they thinking?
You're only in a slump, Superman. You're only in a slump.
I'm going to go make the Leaning Tower of Giza straight Giza.
Yeah.
It's no longer going to lean.
Stupido, Superman. Stupido.
Fixing architecture, one. vandalistic moment at a time. Right. And I just made up a word for a cringeworthy moment of the movie. There you go.
I really like, I don't know what it is. That's one of my favorite. You know, it's like when I was, I think in the '90s, like one of my favorite movies to watch, like just, I just enjoyed having it on and I couldn't tell you what I liked about it so much was Suburban Commando. I quite liked a lot of Suburban Commando. I don't know what it was about that movie. I haven't seen it in decades, but.
Oh man, that poor traffic light.
Yeah. but Superman 3 is one of those movies. I've always enjoyed putting it on and having it on and watching it. So.
Yeah, it's, I mean, those are all fun movies in their own merit. I mean, they all have their moments. I mean, most movies do have their moments. Some of them, like Street Fighter Legend Chun-Li, have no moments and make you wish you had those hours of your life back. But, but then there, but most movies, even the ones that are considered bad by society, do have their moments. And you know, like
you have to come back on the show so we can do a retrospective on Street Fighter.
I will be there. I will definitely be there for that. I still quote that movie to this day.
I quote it all the time. Whenever I'm at my day job and for years and years and years, one of my favorite things to say is whenever something's happening or we're supposed to do something no one told us about, my favorite thing to say is I look whoever it is I'm talking to right in the face, even if they don't get what I'm saying, and I say, in Shadaloo City, nobody tells me anything. It's one of my favorite lines to quote still to this day.
One of my favorite things to do is I'll cover one of my eyes. I guess you didn't see that coming, did you?
Yeah. I love that. I'll... And then another one I love to quote, too, is you got paid?
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of, yeah.
That movie is so quote-worthy and so much fun, in my opinion, so.
Sorry, that made me do an introspective of all, back when I was a manager and some of the employees, I got paid. I'm like, you got paid? Why'd you get paid?
Right.
And they were previous employees when I was still a manager there, so.
Oh, well, yeah.
They know. There was a day they did not get paid.
Well, no, and so we've been talking about Superman. You know, it's one of those things to bring it down bottom line. If you love Superman, the character, if you enjoy the, of course, the original Superman, the movie, I don't understand why you would not have seen Superman 2 already. But if you've never seen Superman 2, I think it's definitely worth a watch, and it's definitely worth revisiting.
Most definitely.
It's, I think in some ways it's definitely a product of its time. But there's so many things that are, we've kind of been picking on it, but let's talk a little bit about the things that are great about Superman 2. So in the last segment, we were talking about Superman 2, how we feel about it today. We were kind of picking on the movie a little bit. So in this segment, we're going to be talking about the things we like about Superman 2. Because Superman 2, the Richard Lester, as well as the Richard Donner, I think the Richard Lester cut, in my mind, is better to watch in sequence if you're going to watch Superman 1, 2, 3, and 4. Because it's more in line. The Richard Donner one would be a little confusing because I feel like you almost have to know a little bit about what was going on behind the scenes with, the troubled production, why Richard Donner actually left the production. There's a lot of history and backstory that goes with that to really appreciate the Richard Donner cut, in my opinion. However, the Richard Lester one, I think, is definitely worth watching in sequence with the other films because I feel like it's more the same tone and kind of fits a little bit more the story beats make more sense because it's canonical, whereas the Richard Donner one is definitely not at this point. But we're going to talk about the things you like about Superman 2. So, Ronnie, why don't you tell me some of the things that you like about Superman 2?
Superman 2, I mean, like I said, like, I love the some of the comedy aspects in there and, like, some of the other things. Like, when Superman was depowered, like, how he was in there getting bullied by the truckers and stuff. And then after, when he got his powers back, he went back. It's like, all right, now it's your turn.
Right.
I love that aspect of it. I love the, you know, it's just the threat level just was so much larger than Superman 1. It just wasn't even funny because he had three beings with the powers of Superman.
Right.
And they showed that when they were in some kind of small town in Planet Houston. And they were, like, just wrecking everything, destroying planes and all this other stuff. And then you hear, you know, they're just traveling the world, just, like, making the world bend to its knees. And they finally get to the White House and make the president, you know, kneel before Zod. Which is one of my favorite moments where he goes, oh, God. He's like, no, Zod.
Yeah, that's a great... that and that's one of the things about Superman, too. It has so many great moments that are so awesome and so much fun. Terrence Stamp as General Zod is one of my favorite movie villains still to this day. He is great as General Zod.
I have a Terrence Stamp action figure, so yes.
I do as well.
And it's, I mean, that's like one of the things, it's like, that movie made General Zod one of my all-time favorite villains just in general. Pun not intended. I mean, it's just, it, I don't know, it's just, I've always loved the character ever since then. I've loved Non and Ursa. I mean, like, any of the games I'll play, if you get to create characters,
yeah,
I'll create the trio just in whatever I do. I don't know why, it just happens. I mean, and sure, why not? Soul Calibur? Let's put General Zod, Non, and Ursa in there in medieval times and have them, you know, clean the floor with Mitsurugi and all these other characters.
Right. Well, no, and those three characters, those three villains, they're the actors, the performances they bring to it, whether you're talking about Sarah Douglas, you're talking about Jack O'Halloran. I mean, they all three of them did such a great job of telling us so much about who those characters are with their actions, as well as sometimes their inaction. You know what I mean? It's just the performances are so great. But there is just, you know, it's just, it's interesting because those characters and Zod resonate still to this day because of Superman 2. I mean, when I think of, you know, the great Superman villains of all time, you know, you have the three, you know, the three criminals from Krypton. And it's interesting too, because when you go back in the comics, it's like, we kind of have representations of them here and there before, you know, Superman 2, but they I'm trying to remember, because I think previously that it was always just like two. Maybe it was just two. They've always done that idea, but it's never been done quite the way they did in Superman 2.
Right. No, yeah, it's in the comics, Superman killed them on the moon with Kryptonite. And that's when they did that whole Superman in Exile storyline.
Right.
And it's just, those are the first people he tried to kill, which, or not try to kill, but those are the first people he actually had to execute because they would not stop in no any other way, which a lot of people tend to forget happened when they watch Man of Steel, but that's for another day. But yeah, it's just, it's, they're barely even thought of before that movie.
Yeah, I know in the, one of the, I can't remember which one it was. I know some of the Superman cartoons have visited the idea of the super criminals, but they're never quite this particular form. And I know it a lot of times in the comics, they were never quite this form either. It's just kind of interesting because, you know, when you talk about the great classic you know, Superman villains, you know, Zod and the super criminals are always there, and they would not be on those lists, I don't think, were it not for Superman 2.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, man, I don't know if that Exile storyline happened in the 80s or not. If it did, it happened after the movie, which that, even, yeah, again, that just echoes, you know, the sentiment that, you know, they were not really big villains until that movie. And it's just, man, it's crazy. It's like to even think about that. Because, I mean, like, look at most of the cartoons and stuff. They use... I still have not seen General Zod, Non, and Ursa used in the same form in anything. I think that might have been out of respect for that material. It's usually like Jax or somebody.
Right.
And, well,
and it's interesting because it's like, in I think Man of Steel is the only production besides Superman 2 that's attempted to represent them. You know what I mean? Because when, I can't remember her character's name, when she shows up,
and she's Feyora. Fighting,
yeah, when Feyora shows up and she fights Superman, they have that big, huge, bulky guy, you know what I mean, who also fights them. And he's kind of the non-stand-in, even though they don't call him Non. So that we do still have them kind of... Because there's a lot of nods to Superman 2, A Man of Steel. Whether you want to talk about that, whether you want to talk about a different version of the truck driver attempting to, you know, abuse Clark Kent.
With the logger.
Where he takes his truck and shoves it on the tree. Like, that's friggin' amazing. We definitely have to talk about Man of Steel at some point, because I quite like that movie.
Yeah, me too.
But, no, yeah, I mean, it's there's a lot of really amazing stuff that's done in Superman 2 that now everyone just associates and thinks of with Superman. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Rogues Radio Podcast. I'm Dave Beatty. I'm your host. You can learn more about me as well as see art and find links to additional episodes, all that kind of fun stuff, at my website, which is at davebeatty.com. That's www.davebeatty.com. I also have a couple of events coming up. September 28th and 29th, noon to noon. I'm going to be participating in the second unofficial 24-hour comic book day challenge. It's a fundraiser for the Clark Memorial Library that is in Clarkdale, Arizona. It's done in partnership between the Clarkdale Foundation, the Clarkdale Downtown Business Alliance, and as well as the Northern Arizona Cartoonist Association, or NASCA. There's going to be six artists theoretically there. We'll see if everyone shows up. It's going to be 24 hours. It's going to be at 921 Main Street in Clarkdale. That's going to be the future home of the Park Hotel. You can come out and watch us struggle to create a comic book in 24 hours with no sleep. This will be our second year doing it. Last year was kind of interesting and fun and gave me one of the creepiest moments that still I haven't gotten over, which was sleeping in a bank vault. All right, so...
In a bank vault.
Yeah, I can't recommend it. It was terrifying. It's giving me the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it right now. I'm never doing something like that again. Oh my god! It was the original like territorial like bank. So that vault was like older than anything, and you just get in there and they would kind of push the door to a little bit, and it's still giving me the creeps thinking about it. I'm never doing that again. The other thing I want to promote real quick is on October 26th and 27th, I'm going to be teaching along with my friend the Janimal. We're going to be doing our Kids Fall Comic Book Crash Course Boot Camp at the Sedona Arts Center in Sedona, Arizona. The last one was quite a success. Everyone had a really good time, but we're going to be teaching how to create comic books. It's primarily aimed at kids, but older teenagers and stuff should definitely attend. We go over a lot of great fundamentals and basics and really teach how to create a comic book. The goal being is at the end you'll have a comic book page and you'll have the basic tools you need to go home to continue to refine your craft. Again, it's October 26th and 27th. They're saying ages 12 to 15. Supplies are included in the course. Again, that is at the Sedona Arts Center. If you're interested in learning more about it, as well as scheduling to have maybe your kids attend, the number is 928-282-3809. Again, that number for the Kids Fall kind of a crash course boot camp with myself and the Janimal, that number at the Sedona Arts Center is 928-282-3809. So, Ronnie, please tell the listeners where to, well, let me first off thank you for being on the show. It's great having you here.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
And I please tell the listeners where they can obviously find your podcast that you're a part of and where to learn more about you on the interwebs.
You can find more about our Turn the Page podcast on Facebook under the, well, we have a Turn the Page page, I believe. If not, rut-row. But we do have Saturday Night Gaming page, which, you know, definitely check that out. Share, like, and subscribe with everybody. And you also have, we have podcasts, YouTube videos. You can find us on all of those. We'll be dropping links on this podcast, so definitely check us out for lots of fun, lots of mayhem. It gets pretty wild on our adventures on Saturday nights.